Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Super Rugby Aotearoa Round 5 review and also the Super Rugby AU or Super Rugby Gold as we like to call it on this channel review round 2 review as well. Four whole games. Now you got to remember, folks, when we had two games we were going for an hour. Now we've got four games and Cornflake Steve has just suggested to me, just asked me, are we going to go for half an hour? Really? You reckon we can get four games in half an hour?
I was trying to be positive. I thought I might try and do what I always try to do and space out my time nicely. I always go on with the intention to do a 15 or 20 minute preview show on my own channel and then talk for about 45 minutes. So, you know, I go in with good intentions, but they never come out well the other side of things. That's for sure.
Look, there's a great great podcast that I listen to called Blood and Mud Rugby Podcast, which is a fun one from the UK. Now, they will start chatting away, introduce themselves, yada, yada, yada. And then about 15 minutes in, they'll go, right, as we always start the show, we'll have a player spotted. And they start their show 15 minutes in. They aim for an hour, but if they ever get finished before an hour and a half, it's a miracle. They once said, hey, perhaps we should give up aiming for an hour. And I said, no, guys, aim for an hour, because then at least we know you're going to stay beneath 5 hours. It is a really good podcast, folks. Please do go give it a listen. And also joining us is Stephen Harris. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, good evening, Chips. Privilege and a pleasure to be on.
Good. Well, as you said, you would like to come on for about 15 minutes, you said. So obviously we'll hand you back to your wife at around about 11 o'clock. Which would be bad.
Yeah, I actually told her about 11:15, so here we
are. For those of you who are listening to the recording, it's only 8 a.m. 8 p.m. which is 8 a.m. Geez, oh dear me, it's been a long
somewhere in the world it's 8 a.m.
Somewhere in the world it's after 5 o'clock. Get those beers in. Cheers, folks.
Priorities.
So priorities, absolutely. So those of you listening on the podcast, I'm on the old summer ale, Monty summer ale, pretending that it's warm. Because me and Corey Flynn, obviously kindred people, because hey, I've got my electric blanket for my knees, just like Corey Flynn brought along to the Crusaders versus the Blues game to do his commentary there as well. Before we actually get into the game, boys, any favourite little anecdotes or little sort of pictures you saw from the weekend?
I don't know how game orientated you want to be, but you know, I was hollering in Yahoo and at Will Jordan, that's for sure.
Yes.
It's on the field, but I mean, that was the highlight of my night, that's for sure. That was the highlight of my weekend. God, it was just about like that.
Stephen Harris, for those again listening to the podcast, Stephen Harris just again a little shake of the head, because you see, other podcasts and other shows, they do a thing called preparation, and they let the guests know what they're going to be asked and what questions are going to be said. On this one, we don't do that. We have a very loose run book, which isn't written down anymore. Everyone just had it kind of vaguely in their heads, and then I just go off on a totally different tangent. and do it that way instead. Simon Hughes. There's three things in life that are inevitable: death, taxes, and crusaders winning in Christchurch. Yes, definitely kind of one of those. But actually, before we get on to that, then let's start on Friday night. The Reds, the Rebels versus the Reds. Now, the reason I'm starting here is if I go to the good games and come to this, everyone will have switched off by the time we do the bad games. So let's start off with the bad game, folks. There will be some good rugby coming later. Promise you. You could just hold on for that, because this first one was shocking, I think is probably the right term. Who am I going to throw to first? Go on there, Stephen, Mr. Harris, your thoughts or anything to take out of the Reds versus the Rebels?
It was a hard watch. I'll tell you what, I've got to give Brad Thorn his dues, because, you know, after being part of the All Blacks and the Crusaders and playing at a level which of rugby people appreciate, it must be hard work for him having to coach at that level. It definitely was a tough watch, and probably at the end of the day, a draw was probably the right result for that particular game, guys, because... yeah, just so many errors. None of the teams could actually string anything together.
No, I gave out coaching tips. Was it this one I gave out coaching tips to? No, it was last week I did coaching tips. God, dear me, this week I didn't bother. This, I think 6-0 at half time. I mean, that's a decent football score, but it's not a very good rugby one, is it, Stephen? is it conflict?
Oh, no, yeah, Stephen's right. It was a tough one to watch. It was error-ridden, mistake-ridden. The set piece was disjointed and broken and messy. No one really took control of the game. There was two half-pie number 10s that didn't really seem like they wanted to be number 10s. They weren't really looking out for the game. They weren't really playing a clever game. They weren't playing towards the style or the conditions, because it wasn't wet, but it was greasy. You know, they weren't playing a clever sort of game anywhere about it. And it was just mistakes and problems for everything. I mean, the biggest stat I found that amazed me about this game for the Reds, they kicked 6 penalties to the corner for a line-out and lost all 6 of them. And that just sums up pretty much how that night went for them. It was just a disaster. And, I mean, Super Time, not very aptly named, is it?
Oh, you see, you've been reading my tweets. That was my best tweet from the weekend. Was who do I go to claim compensation for being missold Super Time? let's get straight. Let's talk about Super Time. So you started there. So there's two different ways. So we have Golden Point here in New Zealand, which is 10 minutes of extra time, and the first side that scores wins. In Australia, they decided to do 2 halves of 5 minutes. And again, whoever scores first wins, which basically meant that both sides decided that they didn't want to concede. And so we just ended up with 10 minutes of kickback, or probably about 5 minutes of kickback and 5 minutes of resetting scrums. It was the worst. The game had been bad, and then Super Time was super bad. and we just did my head in that the Fox commentators were trying to big it up and sell it as super time. And you're just like, mate, are you watching the same game as I am? I know it's branded as Super Time, but that is absolutely horrible to watch. That was perhaps the worst rugby I've had to sit through. And I've had to sit through some club games, I can tell you, with some pretty low-skilled guys. So that was awful. Awful. Aaron goes, yeah, maybe the whole game should be 5 minutes long in Australia. It would save.
Brilliant.
It would definitely save me from wasting hours of my life on some of their rugby, because that was awful. Look, 12 turnovers by the Rebels. 21 turnovers by the Reds. As you've already said, conflict, 6 lost lineouts by the Reds, and the Rebels lost 4. So both of them down in the 60% completion rate for their lineouts. 15 penalties by the Rebels, 10 by the Reds. Okay, not as bad as the Waratahs the other week when they were up in the A-teams, but still not very good either here on this one. I think, Jordan, we absolutely could not comment on your on your comment there about bordering on match fixing by the TMOs. No, I'm sure it wasn't. You must have enjoyed the fact we had a couple of cards though, Cornflake.
And that's it's almost a given. I was going to talk about some positives. Now, some positives, I think the Reds fight back. It was a pretty good positive. Now, I mean, it wasn't much of a fight back considering the circumstances of how the game went. But, I mean, there was their game to lose. And they did come out quite well at the end, scoring pretty much a couple of minutes from the end to get to force the game into that super time. And they certainly carried that momentum through into that super period. And really were the only team to have a chance to actually get a point, although that ball seemed to just get hung up and stuck in the clouds, didn't it? Because it just went up and stayed up and stayed up and just didn't come down. And Hegarty's almost upside down watching it go towards the post. Why he kicked that also was a bit perplexing as well. And he had done no kicking all night. So he stepped up to it. I guess maybe the range was about all I could really put it down to, a bit too long for the other guys. But yeah, it just never seemed to come down, that kick. But yeah, they did well to come back. I think they dominated that second half. Accumulated their points nicely, got a little bit of excitement into the game, I guess, if you want to be really desperate about this one. But yeah, cards, discipline, yeah, it went hand in hand with a game of that sort of nature, didn't it? Because it was messy, it was scrappy, it was frustrating. Imagine we were watching it and we were sitting here getting frustrated and bored out of our brains. Imagine playing it. You must be just ready to kick yourself in the foot because there's nothing went right throughout that game, and not until the very, especially for the Reds, not until the very, very end, they actually got a little bit of momentum and carry that through, got some points. And, I mean, they should be, I think, if anyone's going to be happy from that, it's pretty hard to be. The Reds, once again, probably should be, because they probably should have lost that game, really.
Yeah, they should. I mean, the first half, whilst it was 6-0, I think we had four kicks at post turned down to go to the corner, as you say. Neither side were executing that. And you're like, guys, look, just take the threes and you'll win this game. Neither side was willing to do that. What we saw here, I think, was in Matt Tamua and James O'Connor, we've got two good guys who can play 12 or fullback, but they're playing 10, unfortunately. And they just don't have the right game management for this. We saw that with the James O'Connor interception that let Meeks run in unopposed for a try. He was overplaying in the middle of the park when they were 3 points behind. And that suddenly went to 18-8, you thought, this game's over. You're right, they did come back. How did they come back? They came back because Matt Tamua did a very loose kick into the middle of the pitch, straight down someone's throat, which allowed James O'Connor to run it back as the kind of good fullback that he can be, or the good outside back that he can be. And so, yeah, there it was, 10s not doing their job properly, or two guys at 10 who aren't natural 10s, being asked to control a game, and both of them, not really doing that. I don't think that, to me, that was one of the things from this.
And they weren't really, it's not their game as a 10 either. Like, it's not their game, the conditions weren't their style of game to play. Even if they were at 12, I think they would have been fairly ineffective as well, because they are dry track sort of bullies, aren't they? They are guys that like to run, they are guys that like to create space by drawing players in and offloading or creating sort of space. They're not that old school, kick to the corner, play territory, take set piece, kick. They like to run, they like to attack. And that game just did not play into their favour at all. So I think it's the style of player they are. They're both sort of similar. And they were reluctant to, I guess it's go into their shell. They still wanted to play their natural game. And that just, that wasn't happening in those sort of conditions for them.
No, we saw it in the turnovers. Yeah, you guys, you're just trying to force passes and that kind of thing, which just they just shouldn't have been doing. So let's get on to then. It was the game of the weekend. I'm not sure whether we should leave this one to last or whether we should go chronologically, but we do go chronologically on this show. So we'll stick that way. And I think this is why Stephen kind of messaged me just before the show going, hey, can I come on just 15 minutes to talk about this? So I'm guessing it was this game that you wanted to talk about, Stephen. Harris.
Yeah, you pretty much say, listen, first of all, I just thought it was a great contest, and it's probably the game of Super Rugby Aotearoa at this stage. You know, in terms of the build-up leading into the game, I think on that alone, it pretty much delivered. It delivered with the atmosphere. Now, there's not too many times you can silence a Canterbury crowd for a while, or you know you've pretty much got them when they actually start booing every decision. So it was a really good, genuine contest where I probably felt at the halfway stage it really was anybody's game, where I think some of the games that we've seen the Crusaders play in recent times, you just knew they would finish over the team that they were playing with. Unfortunately for the Blues, they finished over the Blues on the back of you know, a couple of pieces of magic, which we'll get to shortly.
Yeah, I mean, this one kicked off at a real pace, didn't it? I mean, it was really energetic early on. Satutu got himself over the line, but got held up over the line. Eventually, they got under advantage soon after that. The Blues got ahead with a pass to Mark Talia. Talia. Cornflake, a lot of props for Talia in this game. And he had a great sort of first 20 minutes. But then I think the bridge showed us why he's been voted as the number one winger by his peers in New Zealand. I mean, he really shut Talia down, didn't he?
Yeah, well, I mean, I mentioned this on Twitter during the game that the Crusaders are a team that can adapt and they can change their style and they can target sort of areas. They're clever team, and they're a team as well. That's the thing about them. They can spot each other's sort of areas they need to look out for. And I mean, he would have got the message and something would have triggered in there like they do and what they did later on in the game, just to know, shut him down instantly. He's not going to create. He's going to go for something. He's going to go for a corner. And we've seen Bridge straight after that, when he was really controlling the game, he absolutely sacked him in a big splatter tackle as soon as he got the ball. Big hug, down to ground, done that two or three times, and that really did shut him down big time. It really did take out a lot of that creative force of him. But, I mean, yes, that's good by Bridge. The player can have the capabilities to do that, but I think that's just the way the Crusaders play and the way they are, that he can or they can collectively target who are the guys they need to really watch out for. And unlike we'll see later in the last game of the round, teams often need half-time where they can go inside and the coaches can say, hey, look, you need to look after this guy. He is absolutely killing you out there. The Crusaders are smart enough that they can target those guys on the run, out in the field, in an instant, you know, and by then they haven't scored two or three tries and taken the game away from you. So that was a big, big difference to be able to step up like that and to shut him down. It's like we've seen other teams do to Caleb Clark with the Blues as well. When he's really on a rampage against the Highlanders, they shut him down and that changed the game for them as well. So, yeah, that's smart, clever, and there's a reason why he's one of the best wingers, not just for his attacking abilities. He's really strong defensively as well.
Yeah, and in the air, which is why he's one of those kind of players who can happily play fullback and happily play wing as well, isn't he? One of those kind of the balanced back three players. In that first half, though, there were definitely mistakes. I mean, Mwanga kicked out in the full. A couple of players kicked out in the full in this game. Definitely a lot of pressure on them. I think they knew this was effectively a final for both the teams in this one. To me, it looked like the Blues were really trying to get outside that last winger, because we know that Severese in particular likes to come in and try and cut off the ball. But they just couldn't quite get it done. And to sort of get any more points on the board. The Crusaders forced to kick penalties at the end. With a 2-7 penalty count in that first half hour, and they managed to get things down to 1-point game, 6-7 at half time. I think the Blues would have wanted to have had a few more points on the board than just the one try. I think they definitely had the opportunities to have got some more. And we'll feel a bit disappointed to have been that close at halftime.
Oh, man, this is Crusaders going into this at halftime, and they're happy. They're in 1 point. I mean, that is Crusaders. They could have gone in probably 7-3, and they would have been quite happy 10-3. Yeah, they're within that chance. All they need is that little, you know, to be within that scoring play, within single figures, And the Crusaders, they're happy with that because they know what they've done in that first half and as to wearing their opponent down. As long as they're within that chance, they are always going to be dangerous. And I think the Blues dominated the opening half an hour of that game and they didn't get enough from it. They only got that one try. They needed more. And you just can't take that time against the Crusaders for granted that you are in control of the matchup. You have to take as many points as you can because you just don't know if you're going to get more chances like that again. That could be your last time to get those sort of points on the board. So they needed more from that. They need to go into halftime with, you know, mid-teens up towards 20 points on the board, really put that pressure on and force the Crusaders to come out in their second half with a lot of work to do.
Yep. Now, Robert Bull asks, can you ask referee if the rules have changed about players jumping and then hitting the ball into play? Yes, the rules have changed. So it's not where you take off from, but it's where you land. And as long as the ball doesn't cross the line, of the plane, then you can sort of bat it back in. So, yes, you're allowed to jump from out of play into play with the ball. Yes, you're right. The rules have, or the laws have changed around that. And last week we had a long chat about that. And actually, a lot of people say, yeah, basically disagree with it. We'd like to go back to the old rules of kind of where you land is where you are. Where you next touch the ground is where you are, rather than some sort of in the air, I'm not in or out of play kind of stuff. So they came back. Stephen Harris, what do you think about Harry Plummer's the experiment with Harry Plummer at 12?
He was solid, didn't really see a lot of him. I only really saw him in one situation from a defensive situation. That might have been when Otero Blackhead left the field. It didn't do a hell of a lot for me, to be brutally honest. Probably defensively he was okay. But I just want to touch on something Steve said about the Crusaders being very, very smart and the Blues maybe not so smart, especially those... You know, there was a real break in momentum around about that 30th minute. And one of the reasons was we had two side entries from Bowden Barrett, and they were definitely side entries. They weren't even non-clear cut. You know, they were clear cut side entries, and it just broke momentum. Then we had Ofa Tuanga Fassi give away two penalties, and you basically, you'd be dominated, but all of a sudden you're handing momentum back to the Crusaders, and that's what the Blues kept on doing. Now, the other area where I thought the Crusaders were very, very smart, I thought the Blues were doing really well in the physicality stakes. They were actually hitting them behind the advantage line. So all of a sudden, they changed their tactics again. Hey, we'll go to the high kick game. And if you look at most of the contestable kicks, most of those contestable kicks were won by the Crusaders. So you took that possession away from the Blues when they really, really, really needed it.
Yep, no, and they did play this possession game well. Ended up being 60% possession, 61% territory, playing the game where they wanted to. Things were looking pretty good around about 54 minutes. I thought Kiriwani showed some rugby nous that we've not seen from him before with that quick taken penalty. He understood where the ball was, what the situation was. In fact, he could run quickly into a player, get advantage, keep himself up, get the ball free, and knew that, hey, look, we've got another free play here because they didn't retreat 10. So I thought that was good thinking by Akira straight in front of the post there. Now, a lot of people are talking about the fact that the conversion was charged down as being a turning point. I think it was much more Richard Mwanga's little grubber restart where he spotted that the Blues had fallen asleep. They weren't marking the short one, grubbered it, picked it up. And I thought, yeah, wonderful piece of play by Richard Mwanga there. Someone was saying, oh, yeah, great kind of instinct play. No. That's not instinct play. That's something he's practiced over and over and over again. So he gets it exactly right. And he's just waiting for the opportunity to use it. And he saw a good opportunity and used it well. I thought that was, to me, it's more what Richard Mwanga did rather than the charge down that I think changed the momentum at that point.
Paul, I'm going to interject there, mate. I actually think the charge down breathed a bit of life into the crowd and it just gave it a bit of momentum. I think you're right about Mwanga. It's something that he he's practiced and what it did. The charge down, I reckon, deflated the Blues walking back when they were thinking, here we are, this kick should go over. And they were busy lamenting their misfortune and that kick missing, that they weren't awake. And you spoke about Akira Iwani before. If the Blues learn anything when they play the Crusaders again, you've just got to be switched on and take those opportunities really, really quick. That's the sort of thing that made Zinzan Brook such a great player. He'd do that instinctive quick tap thing, and you're seeing that with the Crusaders. They really do think on their feet. And, you know, that up until that moment, that had taken the crowd out of the game. When that try was scored, you could hear a pin drop. And then all of a sudden, you heard a cheer around. Now, to hear that cheer must have been amazing for those Crusaders players. And the Blues walking back, probably thinking to themselves, oh, no, and they're so focused on that. What they basically needed is to be onto it, get a good field exit, and get back in the half and force Canterbury to play, or the Crusaders to play in their half. So, whilst it may not have been the big thing, I think it was apart from a mental aspect, I think it played its part.
I was going to pinpoint that passage, that whole period, and the build-up to that try as well, because that was that absolute chaotic storm of a referee call before that as well, before that try with the ball. Well, I mean, no one really knows what on earth went on there. The ball bounced around everywhere. The TMO said one thing. The referee said something else. He eventually decided to go against what the TMO said. The crowd didn't like it, so they were on their backs. The Crusaders were probably, a bit peeved off of that as well, because that went against what actually happened on the television replays. I think it was a cumulative thing, that plus then the try being scored. And then I think, that's just like that. That was the switch, of just that's it. It's time. It's time to go. It's time to turn it on. Charge down, kick. Up goes the crowd. Up goes, the adrenaline. Oh, Richie's just done this brilliant little thing and then scorched through 20 meters. We're in there 22. Up goes the crowd. Up goes the adrenaline. Then it turns mental and the Blues go, oh, dear, this isn't good. The crowd's on their feet. Our lead isn't, what it should be. We've thrown away some points. We're starting to get flustered. We're on the back foot defensively. They're charging at us at a rate of knots. They're offloading. They're fast ball. They're breaking tackles. They just couldn't handle it. And, I mean, it was that tempo rise. You just saw, I think I talked about in the preview, it might have been Paul, I can't remember if it was that or last week, about how most of the other teams, especially the Chiefs, seem to just have that flatline pace where it doesn't matter if they've got the momentum on their side or they're doing poorly, they just go that same speed. The Crusaders showed just what it takes to be a good team, that ability. They just, at the flick of a switch, they just went from cruising along, playing okay, it was a tight game, but then bang, they just upped that tempo like nothing else. And I mean, there's very few teams in the world that could handle that sort of play when they're on, when things are going like that, and when they've got their backs up, crowd on them as well. It's just, it's near on an impossible thing to stop. And it looked inevitable. As soon as that happened, they started getting a few phases of that pace. It was just like, oh, this is not looking good for the Blues. If they can keep this up for the rest of the game, it is all over. And I think those two halves had such a massive similarity about them as well. The first half, that Blues dominated for 25, 30 minutes. And then the Crusaders took over, got back in the game. You saw that second half, the Blues dominated early. Again, didn't get that good little portion of the lead. And then as soon as that took over, you just knew, it's like the Blues aren't going to get another chance now. They either have to hold the scoreline or that's it, because their chance is gone. Poof, it was. You see it happening. It was inevitable. It was like watching a tidal wave come in on the beach. It was just always going to crash into the city, and that's what happened for the Blues. Sadly, it was a great game overall, but the Crusaders just can just turn it on when they want, and they are just something in the next level. And, you've got to credit the Blues here, because no one has pushed them so far. The Crusaders has just cruised along. Sure, they've been pushed, but they've never gone to that next level. And I think, at that 60th minute or so that it was, they were forced and had to go to that next level. And that is something we've not seen from this season, which is brilliant to see. And you've got to credit the Blues for that. They have actually pushed them up to that next tier.
Yeah, and there were a couple of players from the Blues who had been played well up till then, all of a sudden started making mistakes. The red-headed halfback, he puts a kick straight over the sideline, It was supposed to be a contestable kick. You give away field position, then you had Bowden Barrett with a kick that unfortunately didn't find the inside the white line as opposed to the outside white line. It was, it's basically small margins at this level, and that's why this game really did have a test match feel about it, but it also had an inevitability about it once the Crusaders hit that lead, once that momentum from the crowd got involved. It was really, really quite interesting. There were some good individual performances as well. You know, some players that can basically look at their games and, well, you know, they've enhanced their reputations. You know, somebody like Satutu, who his birthday today, I mean to say, his contesting of ball against Sam Whitelock, I thought was just unbelievable. And you saw his power and strength with that first no try. Yeah, he's making every post a winner. And hey, Akira Ioane, where have you been for the last 2 or 3 years? It kind of looks like you're back. You know, then you had players that we've talked about, like Mark Talia, potential All Black, but unfortunately you actually found out who the All Black was on the night in George Bridge. He came back in terms of the matchups. I do, before I go, just want to do touch about a rule as well, guys, but I'll let you guys have a crack in and around some players that you guys might have been impressed with.
I just want to add on what you said about how the Blues players, who were so good for that first 60 minutes, then fell off. I think we can see the flip side of that. Like Richie Moanga, he's getting all the plaudits for how good he played, but he was pretty invisible for that first 50, 60 minutes. So he was steady enough, as were most of the Crusaders, but he just flipped it over the other side. And when, you know, the good players who look good when the pressure come on fall off, the better players, or the top-tier players, when the pressure come on, they step it up in another gear. So there we've seen just what it's like. Like you say, that's when the All Blacks, you know, those guys that are at that top level, that's when they start to show up and really do go to that next tier of play.
I do, yeah. In the chat, Aaron, yeah, Kurt Eklund came on.
Oh, brilliant.
Played a really good game. Oh. Very, very good. Yep. Obviously played a lot longer than he was expecting to have to do because of the injury came on the first half. A really good game. So Tutu will be an All Black. Yeah, we I think everyone's saying that. And we've seen that with the fact that he's been got the contract extension as well. Barrett is far better 10 than 15. I don't know. He's definitely a very, very good 10. I think he's a decent 15 as well, though, for that matter. But I think one of the things you're talking about here is when there's sort of some of the players with me is, look, again, I've seen things where people say, oh, look, Moanga outplayed Barrett yet again in a face-off. He's the better fly half. It's like, well, actually, there's more to it than that. Like the platform you're getting from your forwards and the support you're getting from other players as well. It's not just down to two players playing it out. So, yeah, I don't agree with that one personally. I did question, though, at 16:15, you've got a one-point lead. The Crusaders in front of the posts, got 5 metres out, and they kick the sticks. I thought at that point, 5 minutes after they'd scored their try, everything was going for them, I'd have put down a scrum 5 metres out from there and tried to kill the game rather than just get yourself 4 points ahead. 4 points ahead.
Paul, it's 3 easy points in a tight game. You throw it over, you put the pressure back on the visitors on the scoreboard immediately. You brought the crowd into the game. I actually thought it was the right decision. In the past, at times we've actually seen the Crusaders being guilty of actually kicking to the corner and not often getting paid dirt. You know, 9 times out of 10, they normally do. But I think it was the right decision, and the game, well, the win showed it was the right decision.
I think we talked about it in the preview, didn't we? How the Crusaders will turn this into a test match atmosphere. That's what they did, and they brought with it test match tactical play as well. What do you do? I mean, it doesn't matter. Bonus points not even a statement to even make about that. It's all about the victory. You take the points, carry it on. They were so in control at that point that they were in control far beyond what they could have ever have dreamt of at that stage. So they were just blitzing the Blues. They go back, restart, and They weren't relinquishing it at that point. It was just all red.
Well, Aaron agrees with me. He thought it was a strange call. as well. I think they should have gone for the scrum there and got the try and got themselves more than a score ahead. But there you go. We'll agree to disagree on that one. But yes, look, that's four wins out of four for the Crusaders, plus a couple of bonus points in there as well. You've got to say, whilst they had their fingers on the trophy with those bonus points before the game, yep, they've got one hand on the trophy, haven't they, Cornflake? I can see you putting that hand out there and grabbing it.
Give it to them now. Let's be done with it. The rest of us will just fight over third and fourth, shall we?
Yeah, it was kind of funny watching the game today between the Hurricanes and the Highlanders, and the commentators going, oh, yes, they're playing this to stay in the competition. To kind of, neither of these sides are going to get anywhere near winning this competition. There's only one place it's going to, and that's the Crusaders. Look, we're off. doesn't matter what happens in this one. This is not going to alter who wins the tournament.
Yeah, I agree. Unless we're going back into lockdown four, I don't think so. I think that's the only result. But one area I do want to touch on, guys, and I'll be interested to get some feedback. There are a couple of penalties where the Blues were pinged for players being trapped in the ruck. And now one of them clearly showed that Bryn Hall was basically had his knee on the player who couldn't move. I often like the way that Nigel Owens referees a game. He will basically call out a referee or a player holding a player down and pretty much call him out and say, you know exactly what you're doing. You're holding this player and you're holding him down. The ball is free. It's there and it's available. Now, to me, guys, it just seems blinking harsh. You saw Dalton Papali with a brilliant offensive tackle and there was no way he could physically roll away. He was trapped in there. I would rather we went back to the old rule, unplayable attacking team gets the ball again. To me, it's not worth 3 points, guys. Seriously.
Okay. This comes down to a coaching kind of point, is that, look, they are tough calls, but basically it's kind of like, right, you need to tackle in a way that you don't land on that side of the tackle. And that's part of it. It's not about whether you can, it's not about being able to roll away. It's about not getting there in the first place because they're trying to provide quick ball. I maybe a free kick rather than a penalty. So you can't kick for three. The law basically says you can't put yourself there in the first place. If you do, you're at risk of this.
The law's an ass.
I mean, if the ball's there and you can get it and it's like you say, available and things like that, then what's the big deal? If he's all over the ball, then sure. You know, if he's lying on the ball, if he's in the way of the ball, okay. And I mean, we've seen Aaron Smith do it a bit differently, but when he ran onto that player that was trying to roll away and he just ran into him and fell over him next to the ruck in the game against the Canes just gone tonight. I mean, yeah, you're milking the hell of it, aren't you? But I mean, it's pretty much a silly sort of thing to do. I mean, he wasn't going to run that line anyway. He was going to pass it. It's just, yeah, it's a bit silly, but yeah, it's the thing of the referees, isn't it? Then they have this things they can be opinionated on, and then they have these things that they just go straight to the letter of the law, regardless of how it plays out. But yeah, if the ball's there, just go, just play. And if it's not stopping the play, then why stop the play?
Yeah, if you're not interfering with play, yeah, then it shouldn't be called. Absolutely. And there was one there where the scrum half could get to the ball, but the player was between him and the ball. But yeah, he could still get to the ball. So let him get the ball and just play on.
Just ruck him. Bring it back.
Says the man from Southland who's kind of like, I really just want this way they played back in the 80s.
Before my time, Paul. Come on.
Okay, 90s then. I don't know.
You know, the other thing is, one of the posters just sort of messaged even the defending teams are coming up with strategies to keep the tacklers locked in. And don't tell me that they're not working on that, because There's enough video footage to work out what you can and can't do. And I would suggest the, you know, just to my way of attacking, we've given all the rights to the attacking team and taken a few away from the defending team. I just think it's something we gotta look at. I'm gonna hang in there, guys, because when we're talking referees, I do want to touch on a couple of incidents from the Highlanders and Kane's game this afternoon.
So yesterday I was at Manukau versus Papeterite, and I talked to the referee after that game and said, "Hey, are you guys using the same law or the same interpretations that they're using for Super Rugby, or are you sticking to the normal ones?" And he said, "No, we've been asked to do the same thing as the Super Rugby referees." And he says, "But it's taking a while for the players and for us to adjust to it." And one of the comments in here about saying, "I think I'm starting to think referees are easing up on the breakdown and the offside line a bit in the last couple of weeks." That is what he's referring to. Yeah, the referees getting more used to it and deciding what is and what isn't going to be called for. So, yes, it has it has definitely changed a little bit. So congratulations to the Crusaders. You've won the competition. You've just got to play four more games to prove it, basically. In the live chat, yes, the Blues probably will come second. And then it's a bit of a scrap between the Canes and the Highlanders, probably for third. And fourth, with the Chiefs finishing last, let's be honest. But hey, we do have 5 weeks to decide that. On the other side of the ditch, though, we then had we followed that game up, one of the best games of rugby we've seen this year, with one that wasn't, to put bluntly, the Waratahs versus the Force. And in that first half, the first 35 minutes, the Force went out to a 0-14 lead. And a lot of us thinking, yes, heart over head might win for a change. Nah, sorry. But yeah, but whilst the Force scored 14 unanswered points, then the Waratahs decided to score 23 unanswered points to win it. When we did the preview, you were saying, hey, look, they've got a spine there. But this really was Super Rugby players versus club players with a few Super Rugby players involved, right?
I didn't get that impression, not whatsoever. No? I got the impression that the Waratahs actually got told what to do at halftime, and they actually, for once in their careers, actually executed it for a change, which they don't normally have the ability to do. The Force dominated them, territorially kicking, absolutely destroyed them. Bernard Stander destroyed the Waratahs in that first 38 minutes. They were all over them. They were pinned back. They were pinned down. Jono Lance is a perfect executor of that sort of tactical kicking game. And his experience, he had that game on a string. But the difference, the Waratahs came out in their second half and they just played, well, boring Australian rugby. It was just they slowed it down. They kept in the forwards. They denied the Force any ball. And they kept them pinned down that way. The Force kicked free. They just slowly trudged their way back up again. They'd kick away. They'd trudge their way back up. I mean, it was clever. It was well played. And I guess you credit the coaching staff and the ability that they did to change the way they were playing and take it to the Force that way, because they obviously identified that's how they could change the game. But yeah, it was a contrasting two halves. The Force, I thought, played really well in that first 40 minutes or first 38 minutes. And if they can keep that standard up, if they can learn how to, I guess, play more of that slow forward base ball that the Waratahs did show them. I think, as much as I'd never like to praise Michael Hooper, he did a lot of work in that second half. And he was probably his best game he's had for a number of years now. So that was really, really good for them. But yeah, Bernard Stander, he was man of the match. But I really did enjoy it from Ferris and Stowers as well. The rest of their back row, I thought, for the Force was really, really, really good. So they just let it slip in the second half, couldn't find their momentum and just couldn't get back into that territory game. But it was great to watch as they came in. And I think they proved a pretty decent little point here that they can actually play at that level. And they are thinkers enough to actually get over and have a game plan that can be better. But they just didn't have that plan B for when the Waratahs came out saying a little bit better in that second half.
Yeah, And I was about to say, Paul, another key moment for me was just that try just on half time to that young prop Bell as well. Just giving away a penalty, giving that field position and just giving them a little bit of momentum. 14-0 at half time would have sounded a hell of a lot better than 14-7. So it just meant that the Waratahs weren't that far off. And then basically Harrison hit that penalty just after half time and another one again on the 60th minute. And they were pretty much almost back on level terms. And from there on out, I thought the Force also had played that first half just surely on, you know, being back playing top level rugby. It kind of looked like a little guy shield challenging, throwing everything at the challenger in the first 40 minutes, and then completely running out of puff in the second half.
And you know what? I will jump in on Alex's comment about the commentary being so boring. And I'd also like to credit you, Paul. Credit you because you can actually have tried to say Mark Nawangani Tawazi's name, whereas those mugs in the Australian commentary, what did they call him, Marky Mark? That is massively so unprofessional. When I heard them say that, I'm like, take your job seriously, man. I mean, you're there as a gifted man, just, you know, rocking up because, oh, you're a former Wallaby. I can do what I like. Get a grip. Learn to do your job properly. Learn to say the names. Even Paul's given it a crack and has a half-decent job of it, but at least give it a go. I mean, anyone else can have a go and say it, and we're just, you know, ragtag amateurs down here, and we can say it all right.
Hey, we're very good. We're very skillful amateurs, not ragtag. How dare you? You're right. It was Kafer that was doing that. To be fair to the actual caller of the game, he was doing it right. But the experts or the summarizers or whatever you want to call them, you're right. Kafer was using Marky Mark rather than Nawanga. I'm laughing now.
Nawanga Nick Tawazi.
Nawanga Kwita Tawazi. I literally sat here during that game just saying it over and over again after the lead commentator had said it, trying to get better at it. Sorry, I've actually spent some time on this name, unlike all the others, this is a kid who is good, right? And we're going to see him around for the next 10 years. So, yeah, learn to say his name, Kafer. You're getting paid to do this. Spend the next 5 days just saying it over and over again. Don't do anything else because, let's be honest, everything else comes out of your mouth is crap as well. But at least get one thing right. Isaac says that he likes the 50-20-20-50-22 rule, and that definitely helped out the Tars. They played it. I think they played that well, and they used that well in the second half. Bit of controversy over whether it was a pass back into the half or not, and it just means this rule that you can't pass it back into your own 50 to kick into the 22. To me, you're just adding more things for the referee to have to look at and to check. Look, why are you making it a harder job for him? Just look, if the kick comes out of the 15 and goes over the 22, look, that's it. It's good enough. Whether it's passed back in or not, just really, I don't think that was required. But, that led to the Tars bashing over under the posts. I think as Steve has, Cornflake, as you said before, it allows the game to swing and for teams to get themselves out of the out of jail. We're running a bit over, and this was a bad game. So congratulations, Waratahs. We're going to move on. Hurricanes versus the Highlanders. 27 minutes and no score. Wow. Stephen, you said you wanted to talk about referees in this game. So let's start with the referees.
Wait. One thing. Oh, no, okay, sorry. Can I ask when Asafa Aumua is going to move to Auckland?
What?
Well, he's got the hairdo. I'm just waiting for the shift. Carry on.
Yeah, he would definitely fit right in. Obviously, Paul, 27 minutes. You mentioned there was no tries. I reckon there should have been at least one try that was ruled out, and that was the try against the Highlanders.
Against?
I personally didn't think there was a lot in that. I personally think that try should have still stood in my book, because that player was never going to make the tackle. What I couldn't believe, it took them one look to work that one out, but it took Pickerel about seven to work out down the other end of the paddock that a player had been obstructed, and that was a clear obstruction. You didn't need to look at it two or three times, in my opinion. I don't know if that a hot start would have made a big difference for the Highlanders, but to me, I personally think that try should have stood.
I think they were just admiring how amazing that break was from Mitch Hunt. Let's be honest, that was a scorcher.
Yeah, because to my way of thinking, what actually fooled the defenders, he looked like he was going to kick, and they all hesitated, and then he went. Now, I personally didn't feel a lot. I don't think that defender could have reacted fast enough, in my opinion. I see Alex Lovell doesn't agree with me. That's all right, bro. You're out too.
No. Alex was just laughing at the fact that that's his. That's how you summarise the game. No try obstruction. That's the whole summary.
But down the other end, I just cannot believe, and I'm sure Cornflake will agree with me. Why were they having so many looks? It was, you know, to me it was pedantic from Pickerel. He should have made a decision straight away, even from the naked eye. You could see it straight away. It only needed to go to the TMO once. And between the two of them, look at it. Yeah, obstruction. Clear obstruction.
I think it was kind of a tit-for-tat sort of thing, wasn't it? It's like, well, we didn't make one down that end. It's kind of same sort of thing down this end again. So, yeah, we can't be seen as being unbalanced in this sort of situation. It was so close together. But, yeah, they were both pretty light, really, I thought, yeah.
I thought the one that gave Hunt the gap was a little nudged, but to me, I think the gap was there either way. So I think the Highlanders try should have stood. For me, the Canes one, he clearly runs behind the player. Now, would that player have tackled him? No, maybe probably not, but it made the next player come in and it made all the outside players change their alignment, which is what gave Lamapi, which what meant there was no one marking Lamapi. So to me, the Canes try should not have been allowed and wasn't. So I think the first try should have been allowed, but the second one shouldn't have been, in my view. Now, to be fair, we didn't get the end-on view of the Highlanders try, and I think that was the view your shot you needed to see. If there was a big gap between those two defenders, which it looked like from the side, but it's hard to tell from the side, then nothing in it. If they were closer than it looked from the side, then maybe. But from the angle we had, which wasn't great, I don't think there was much in it for the Highlanders try. I thought Fletcher Smith in this game, I mean, it's someone that we've talked about as being a bit of a journeyman. I mean, he's on his third Super Rugby team already, and he's only in his early to mid 20s. He had good moments in this game, but he drifted in and out for me a bit here. This is a game he needed to grab by the neck. Now, I don't know if that's because Geordie Barrett spent so much time at first receiver and basically he's not being allowed to run the game. To me, that was because there's been a bit of talk about Fletcher Smith. At Smiley Sand Cup level, I think he's fantastic. Can he make this step up to this level? I'm not sure at the moment for that. Aaron Smith, TJ would love to have that one, Aaron Smith, where he dummies. Aaron Smith, stand. Look, you're the pillar man. I understand you're a back, you're not a forward. You're a pillar man. You just stand there until the ball's 15 meters away. Don't go with the dummy. And by going, he let TJ Perenara just walk over. The Canes just sort of ran out of players there. And boy, Van Wyk is loving life in New Zealand. And I think they spotted something that the Highlanders have got away with for the opening few weeks, which is putting Mitch Hunt on the wing. And if Van Wyk gets the ball on the wing and sees Mitch Hunt in front of him, oh boy. That's a try all day long. They isolated Mitch Hunt well, And I think the Highlands are going to have to look at that and put Mitch Hunt back into where he should be, which is defending the 10 channel.
Paul, you just touched on something I was going to touch on with this game. Listen, I love Aaron Smith to bits and what he brings, but he missed three tackles in this game. Mitchell's a concern. That's a real concern for the Warriors. For the Highlanders. Beg your pardon.
Ouch.
It's a concern for the Warriors as well. Ouch. Sorry, guys. Sorry, you have all the Highlander supporters. It's a bit of a concern when both your halfback and your first five are not great defenders. And if you look at three, at least two of those three tries, unfortunately Smith involved in one, you're dead right. That's his man. He doesn't do it. He doesn't leave that post, but he left that post. And you look at Mitchell one-on-one versus Van Vake. I know he's a big man, but a better tackle has to be made than that. I mean, to say Rob, I think it might have been Rob Thompson or C.O. Tomkinson that got across and almost took Van Vake into touch. They had a second look at it, but it was the correct of it decision. The trailing foot looked like he got the ball down before the trailing foot hit the line. But I think that's, and I think Corn Flake will agree with me, that's a real issue for the Highlanders. We all know what a good defender TJ is, Steve.
Well, I mean, it's what we talked about before with the Crusaders, isn't it? It's that ability to on the fly develop and evolve and change the way they're playing if something's not working or it's being picked out by their opponent. Most other sides don't have that ability to go through and do that.
Yeah, and if we look at the stats here, so Smith, you're right, missed three tackles. Mitch Hunt missed four. Now, C.O. Tomkinson made 14, missed nil. He had a real good game. Problem is, everybody around him was missing them. Thompson missed three. Nariki missed three. Gregory missed four. He was the only player in that back line making his tackles. So it's pretty simple, folks. Just run at somebody else other than Tomkinson because he can tackle.
I actually think it was a game that there was an opportunity there for the Highlanders to actually win this. But there were a couple of instances from turnover ball. There was another one I can recall under advantage coming on this side closest to us when you're looking at your set. And Thompson, for some unknown reason, it's under advantage. You've got two men outside you. He kicks, and I know Rob Thompson's been talked about as an All Black centre, but to me, I don't think he sets up as outsides very well. He just runs a little bit too far. He's better off moving it. There was another occasion where he had Nariki on the outside. There were two players outside him. That ball needed to be moved, and then you're back up.
I think his game style has changed over the last season, since last year and this year, or into last year and this year. I think maybe something to do with the confidence he's got with guys outside him, having those unknown wingers or those young guys coming through. Maybe he's taking a little bit more of that responsibility on his own shoulders because he's certainly not the creator as in, you know, carrying a defender or dragging two defenders in and getting a pass away just before or in the tackle sort of player that he was beforehand. He's more of a turn into just a barger sort of player, which has kind of taken away a lot of his best attributes, I think, because he did quite a good job of that. And, you know, when you've got Naholo outside you, as opposed, you know, to Scott Gregory or Nariki, Nariki has been good. I think he's coming on quite nicely this season, but I just don't think their confidence is there in that finishing ability or in the man outside that they're going to get, you know, that sort of same service that they'll get from a Naholo or a Ben Smith or some guy like that who's sitting outside him. So I think that's changed his game plan a little bit. I certainly agree. He's not had the season this year at all to the best of what Rob Thompson can be.
You're saying the Hunters could have won this one, but in all honesty, the Hurricanes should have had this one tied up by halftime. They made 20, the Highlanders missed 23 tackles. The Hurricanes had seven clean breaks before halftime, but only managed two tries at 12-0. Their last pass was awful. They just kept dropping the ball when they had tries at their disposal. And the Canes should have had this one wrapped up by halftime. The Highlanders improved in the second half, but which is why we just saw the one try and the one scored by the Canes, which was just after the half-hour mark, just straight after halftime. But that was when Dylan Hunt was injured in the backfield and they just ran out of defenders. And that's one of his jobs, is being that high energy defender. But after that, the Highlanders contained them. But yeah, the Hurricanes should have this one sewn up by halftime, I think.
So they suffered a bit, I reckon, in their line-out. Definitely, they are missing Josh Dixon, and then when Paddy Parkinson went off, it completely fell to pieces. Shelby Ricketts is a decent little player. Wetton's a good workhorse player, but they're not the leaders. They need one of those leaders in there to direct it. I mean, Parkinson was nailing those line-outs all night long. They were going to him. He was at the front. He was in the middle. He was moving around. They were hitting the man all the time. When he went off, it fell apart. They were overthrowing it. They were falling too far back and getting pinched at the front. So that really killed their last little period, I think, and they need one of those two guys to play the full match. And you kind of get the impression from the Highlanders, when they know the game's done, they drag Aaron Smith. When they're still in the game, they really want to win it, they keep him on for the full 80. But when it's like, oh, this is going to take a miracle, we'll just save him for the last 10, 15 minutes or something like that for next week instead. Which, I mean, is a big, big game for them now, especially against the Chiefs. So, yeah, they packed it in, but their line-out was definitely a big part of the finishing, that they couldn't get that job done. But I want to credit the Hurricanes. It's easy to talk about what the Highlanders did bad, but the Hurricanes pack, I thought, was amazing compared to what we probably expected it to be. The big guys, the back five, as I'd call them, the second round, the back row, carried really well, and Lamalpe and Aso were pretty much just an extension of that back row as well. And they always got over the game line. They always got forward. They got them on the front foot, and that just carried on, and they made easy guards when they had those guys charging forward. Karifi with ball in hand was really, really good as well. And that was a big, big difference that the Highlanders couldn't bring on their side of the game when they had that little ball they had, which they made about triple the tackles near the end of the game. It was a ridiculous stat. Yeah. And the tackle count, like 188, and it was still 5 or 10 minutes to play. So a lot of defense, not enough ball. And that the Highlanders just didn't take the chances they had with the little ball they got.
And they did a lot of tackling last weekend against the Crusaders as well.
Yep.
They need to sort that out. Frizzell, again, yep, he had a good game in there, and didn't get the love from the commentators. But I thought he did well. And the Chief says Aaron Smith is still good, but he's getting on now. Hopefully the Landers have a young one learning from Smith. Well,
Fakatava.
There we go. But why Fakatava isn't on the bench and playing, I've got no idea. Every time we've seen him, he's been fantastic. But he's just not getting the opportunities at the moment, which is sad from our point of view.
I see one of the posters put on that they should be looking at Lima Sopawanga. You know, I would be approaching Will Jordan and saying, mate, the fullback position is your position if you want it. You're there. You won't have to sit on the bench, mate, at the Crusaders. It's your position. It's an opportunity for you to develop your game under the roof. You know how the style the Highlanders like to play. He's the guy I would personally be approaching. Although I am wondering, is Mackay's injury quite serious? Why we've not thought of him?
He's not injured.
You're kidding.
He's not on their injury list. No, you took all that's about to say.
Yeah, we've got no idea why he's not playing.
Wow. I must be missing something.
There's something going on in the camp.
We're all missing something.
Yeah. not being part of the camp, we don't know. But something's got to happen in the camp, because why he's not getting game time.
Well, he was that guy, wasn't he? Like, talk about Will Jordan. You know, he was that promising guy, what was it, 2 years ago, that was tearing it up. And they said exactly what you said. You know, that was his chance, opportunity. That would be yours. Come down to the Highlanders and do your thing and develop there, knowing you get that regularly starting position that you don't get at the Crusaders. And happened?
I don't think they've been helped by injuries. And I hope the injury to Dylan Hunt isn't serious, although it did not look good. But also, you lose Lynchies as well. You know, they had a crop of really, really good sevens. And, by the time they ended that game, they pretty much had three tight forwards running around, in the back row. So, that's another area that's hurting them. But, I just want to highlight one guy. I don't know what it is, but he just gets better with age. But Ash Dixon, seriously, that little bit of skill off the mall to just hold, just hold the defender in nicely and recognize there was a gap down that side. Just outstanding play. And he's like a good wine, isn't he? He's just getting better with age.
But also, yeah, he had his head up. So as soon as Amua came in and joined, he's like, right, boys, let's roll it this way. Drag in that guy. Once he's in, now I'm going. Yeah. And he could so easily have gone early or later and got snaffled. But no, the awareness when he's supposed to have his head around someone's bottom, kind of hidden away, not being able to see anything, and pushing to guide that ruck, to guide that mall, sorry, to drag in the player and then to immediately go and put Aaron Smith in the corner. Yeah, very, really good play.
And how about their win day?
Absolutely.
Can't believe it's taken this long for you to mention it. Jeez. Oh, with man Paul, up to the tricks again.
There we go. Yeah, it was all down to the wind. but look, they scored 12 points in the first half with the wind at their back, only 5 in the second half. Out of all the points, 23 of the points were played by the team with the wind at their back, 5 points playing into the wind. There we go. You see, folks, all under had it all down pat.
I was going to say one of the other front rowers I must mention too is Siate Tokolahi, 19 tackles.
The
Southlander. Yep.
That's a big shift.
That's a big shift,
especially for a prop. But yes, Simon's saying that Westpac Stadium needs to shrink. It's too big for rugby. Yes, Sky Stadium now, obviously Sky TV Stadium, not Westpac Stadium anymore. But yeah, it's not a good look, and it's not a good stadium, I don't think, for rugby, because it's an oval that's not big enough for cricket but too big for rugby. Unfortunately, it's a stadium that doesn't please anybody, apart from maybe the beer festival that they hold in the concourse once a year.
As John Mitchell said, we need a rectangular stadium.
Exactly.
With a roof.
With a roof.
With a roof, yeah, roof preferably. Cool. We've covered all the games, boys. Anything else before we sign off?
Hey, if we want to finish on the Hurricanes, a guy that hasn't been mentioned that I would like to give a shout out to, Devin Flanders, nobody. Had a cracking game as well for the Canes, that back row.
Yep. True. Someone I don't rate normally.
No.
I know nothing about rugby.
Paul, just from me, I know it's the season, as you say, is pretty much wrapped up, but I am looking forward to that return match. Crusaders v Blues at Eden Park. Would not surprise me if that's a sellout, regardless of where the teams will be sitting on the table.
And any team coming down to Forsyth Bar, that's worth getting excited for as well.
So who have you got? They ain't winning, eh? Oh, no. Big talk there from Cornflakes. So, yes. Parkinson getting every week's getting better and better. And what was interesting was they moved him around the line and kept throwing to him, and the Hurricanes didn't figure this out. So, yeah, guys, you can ignore the rest of the line apart from where Parry Parkinson is, because it's going to him. It was blatant.
I mean, Dylan Hunt's not a big guy, is he? For a 7 jumper in the line out. And I mean, Whitten probably hasn't been around in the lineup long enough to really take that responsibility, maybe to mix it up one or two. But it's pretty obvious when you had both Dixon and Parkinson, their line out was very, very efficient, because you had two very quality jumpers at the line out. And of course, you generally got two pretty good hookers as well. They always hit their man. So they had that. They're losing that. And so Parkinson becomes a huge, huge part of that that line out set piece now.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Cool. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this show on New Zealand Sports Radio. Don't forget, you can listen to us on the go. Just download New Zealand Sports Radio in your favourite podcatcher, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Acast, all of those wonderful places. We'll be back at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning with the morning sports briefing, as long as Stephen has woken up in time for it. Yes, today I had a bit of a shocking one. I somehow thought my alarm went off at 5:40, and so I got up, got ready, put the kettle on, looked at my phone, went, I've got up an hour early, I can get back to bed again. So,
jeez, so, you're tired just listening to that.
So hopefully I'll be, hopefully I'll get a proper night's sleep. And folks, catch you all tomorrow morning. Thank you, everybody. Like, subscribe, share, all that wonderful stuff.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.